Well, then why don't we get right to work with agenda paper 2? Now, let me make an opening comment in introducing this. This is one of the ones where we went off the rails last meeting. The staff has tried very hard, and Katrina will tell us in no uncertain terms, to concentrate on what they think the words of the standards say, not what they think would be a superior answer. But what do the standards tell us to do? I think if I asked everyone what they thought the superior answer would be, we'd have 18 or 20 different answers and we wouldn't get anything done. So the staff have tried very hard, and Katrina is going to try very hard to keep us in line. So, with that, Takashi?
Good morning, everyone.
So the first item on the agenda is the measurement of long-term interest in associates of joint ventures that form part of the net investments, those interests that we refer to in the paper as long-term interests. When the committee discussed this issue in March, the committee raised some questions and concerns about the accounting for long-term interest, specifically relating to the interaction between the measurement requirements in IFRS 9 and the loss allocation and impairment requirements in IAS 28. So for this meeting, we split our analysis into three pieces. First, we analyzed what we think the existing requirements say. Secondly, we looked at the accounting for long-term interest using an example. And thirdly, we looked at the main concerns raised at the March meeting. The analysis of what the requirements say is set out in paragraphs 24 to 38 of the paper. It explains the rationale for the entire IFRS 9 and then 28 view. And in addition, the paper explains why we think the other views are not consistent with the existing requirements. As discussed in paragraphs 45 to 61, we acknowledge concerns about the potential outcome of applying the entire 9 first and then 28 view. However, before considering any amendment to IS 28 to address these concerns, we think that further research would be required to identify whether such an amendment would solve an identified problem without creating new problems. Having said that, we think the requirements in IFRS standards provide an adequate basis to enable an entity to determine how to account for long-term interests. Accordingly, we do not think that an amendment to IFRS standards is required to answer the question submitted, and therefore, we recommend that the committee does not add the issue to its agenda. So we'd like to split the discussion on this issue. First, we will ask the committee question one in the paper, whether you agree with the analysis that the existing requirements result in the entire 9 first and then 28 view. After discussing question one, we will then discuss the concerns raised and ask you whether you agree with the recommendation. And as Wayne said in discussing question one, please be reminded that we very much focus on analyzing what the requirements say, and our analysis should not be read as a discussion of what we think the best answer might be. Thank you.
Okay. Comments? Martin?
Yeah, Wayne, as you said, based on the existing standards, I agree with that. I believe the example is very, very beneficial. The only thing I'm considering is when we go for this non-interpretation, we would lose all this work, this beneficial work, with regard to the whole example around it. And my question would be how we could save this in the green version of the booklet or whatever, because I believe it would help. Because, as you said, the first intention of someone or the belief how one could account for it could be a different one. So, therefore, I believe it is important to have that example.
Point well taken. Okay, let's just start with Bob and make our way around. Bob?
Okay, thanks, Wayne. I also agree with the staff analysis. I think reading the literature, both IFRS 9 and 28 are required to be applied. I'm not saying it's the best answer, but that's for the board to take up for what we're doing. I think the staff's analysis appropriate in the tentative agenda decision starts out in the right direction. I agree with Martin. I think that the tentative agenda decision item observation D, I think we need to add a little bit more there so people know how to apply the overlay approach. For example, it's not clear what you would do if after taking losses last period under the equity method allocation, you're down to zero, and then you have another IFRS 9 impairment. Well, you can't have a negative asset. How do you bring it back up to zero? I'm assuming reverse some of those equity method losses. I think we need to deal with that in the observation. I think we need to deal with, well, what if subsequently the long-term interest is settled? Again, I assume that we're going to have to reverse some of those equity method losses, but I think some of that practical application, if we could somehow fit that into the tentative agenda decision, I think that would be helpful.
Okay. Bruce?
Thanks, Wayne. I too agree with the conclusions that the staff come to under the standards and the treatment that we've got there. Two comments I have. The first one is I do think we should just ensure that the impairment issues that are raised in the paper should be taken to the guys doing the equity project, because I think there were some questions there that obviously we're not going to answer. The only comment, other than that, the main comment I had was I agree with Martin, but I'd go a step further. I actually don't think this is an agenda decision. I strongly don't agree with that. If you look at all the feedback we've received, it's all said that this is very clearly diverse. People have been reading this differently. I think if we look at I think we said it in Paris 17, that the majority of respondents thought these were unclear. I guess it worries me is that when I look at how many people felt this was unclear, I look at how many times we've debated it back and forth, I don't think this is obvious in the standard. I think this is seriously something we should look at taking onto our agendas, if it's not a change to the standard or as an interpretation, but I do not think that this is something we should just put out as an AD and leave.
I think that was inherent in Martin's comment too, wasn't it? Okay, Kyung-soo.
Okay, thank you. I also agree with the staff conclusion and all other people's comments. If I were the staff and if I strictly follow the existing standard, I would reach the same conclusion, so that I support the staff conclusion. But still, I have a couple of concerns, which I think we have to send to the, the Bruce said, to the equity method research project. The first one is about the double counting issue. Still, there is a double counting of losses, I believe, if we apply IFRS 9, IAS 28, because the expected cash flow and the results of operation are not completely independent. They are somewhat interrelated, so that we cannot solve the independent issue or the double counting issue. So that the double counting issue is a kind of important issue, I think, for me. The second issue I want to say is that if we apply both standard, the IFRS 9 and 28, we're going to come up with some number, but sometimes the number doesn't mean anything meaningful number at all, especially when we stop at the second step in the application of impairments. If we apply IFRS 9 and IAS 28 together, then we're going to come up with three steps of impairment steps, the test. The first one is the impairment from the IFRS 9. The second one is the allocation of the additional losses from IAS 28. And the third one is the impairment losses from IAS 36. My concern is, what if we stop at the second step, application of the additional losses? We're going to come up with a number, but I don't know what the number really means. So that these are, I think, very important issues that we have to go for, but we cannot solve it at this meeting. So that my conclusion is, I support the staff conclusion. We can make the final agenda decision at this moment, but we have to send these concerns to the equity method research project team.
Okay. Tony?
Yeah, I too support where the staff have got to. I think it does flow logically from the guidance in the two standards. I'm not intrinsically troubled by the fact that there are different impairment tests, because I think they're applied to different units of account. And we do that in several places in the standard. So we do that in IFRS 5 if you have a disposal group that includes assets that aren't the subject of IFRS 5. We do the same thing when goodwill's tested for impairment, in that you first test the unit of account of an individual asset, and then you test goodwill. So I'm not intrinsically troubled by that. I think the tension that everybody's talked about was the board's decision to decide on the allocation of losses model that they decided on in IAS 28. And as you said at the beginning, that's what the board decided, and that's not something that we can address. So I am comfortable with where the staff has got to. I think it does flow. I think the next discussion in response to the question that we're going to be asked next will determine whether or not this ought to be an agenda decision. I'm comfortable with the agenda decision as it's drafted, but I think if we feel we need to add in more to sort of cover what Martin suggested or what Bob suggested, I think it probably ceases to be an agenda decision at that stage, and it becomes something more than that. Yep. And that's maybe something we can come back to as we're going to be asked a second question.
Yeah, let's hold that. I've made a note of that, and I think that's one for after we've discussed all of the others. Baylong?
Hey, based on the current requirement of IAS 29 and IFRS 9 and IAS 29, agree with staff conclusion. Just a couple of points. Paragraph 47 of the agenda paper provides that it would be rare that the equity would recognize any impairment related to long-term interests already measured under IFRS 9, other than the expected loss under IFRS 9, which potentially resulted in recognition of impairment loss not yet incurred. The potential difference between IFRS 9 impairment and IAS 28 impairment assessment could be due to the difference in discount rate. IFRS 9 requires original effective interest rate, whilst the value in use model under IAS 28 or IAS 36 requires pre-tax rate that reflects current market assessment of time value of money and the risk specific to underlying asset. Furthermore, IAS 36 also allows impairment to be assessed under, using fair value less cost of disposal, which is different from the IFRS 9 impairment basis. And alternative may face the double counting or inconsistency in assessing impairment under two different models is to make minor amendment in IAS 28 to specifically exclude long-term interests from impairment assessment under IAS 28 to restrict the scope of IAS 28 in respect of long-term investment to only share of loss, but exclude impairment assessment as such assessment is already done under IFRS 9. And second is that I also have some concerns whether the example to illustrate the impairment allocation is too simple. And may address possible permutations.
Okay. Reinhard?
Thanks, Wayne. I as well agree with the staff analysis. And I commend the staff for pursuing all the issues that have been raised and thoroughly investigating them. And the technical analysis, I believe, is sound, as others have said. I think maybe just casting ahead a little bit, Wayne, what troubles me probably most is the issue that I know we'll talk about later, which is whether that's the best answer. And one thing that I didn't see explicitly raised in the example, which is the cause of my concern, is when you measure the expected credit loss on the long-term interest under IFRS 9, when those losses actually occur in the future, it seems to me that you would be picking those up through your accounting for the share of the equity losses of the investee. So I guess I'm concerned, and I haven't worked through an example, but I'm concerned there may be a potential for recognizing a loss through IFRS 9 and then subsequently a loss when you pick up those losses when they occur, assuming everything occurs as you forecasted, as your share of equity losses. And so, as I say, I'm not entirely convinced that the answer is the best answer. And so I think that's maybe the subject of the next discussion. I do agree with others that given the concerns that have been raised and the very, the divergent views that exist, I'm not also convinced that the agenda decision is the best route, and it may be something else, because besides the items that others have raised in terms of what would be nice to see if this is where we end up, we've talked about as well the presentation issues in terms of how do you show in the financial statements the various types of losses that would occur under this view B. So, as I say, that's my perspective.
Thank you. Mikhail?
Yes. I agree very much with Reinhard here, and the only thing that seems clear is that it's very unclear, I think. And it might be so that it's the correct conclusion if you read all the paragraphs letter by letter, so to speak, but I mean, we are in a principle-based framework, so to speak, and if we now talk about something that is in substance, something, I think this should be accounted for as it is in substance and not that we read letter by letter. So even if the conclusion should potentially be right, I think the outcome will be sort of being wrong. So in my mind, we should absolutely continue. And I think in paragraph 51, it was one example on how to continue and to actually ask for an amendment to choose either or of the standards.
Okay. Carl?
Thanks. Very good paper, very good example, very helpful. And I also supportive of a different answer. I agree with staff's analysis, but I'm also supportive of a different approach other than agenda decision. In general, I'm not supportive of adding unnecessary pages to the literature, but I think we are probably facing a necessary interpretation, new interpretation. That's my view.
John?
I found the paper very, very helpful, and I think that the staff analysis and interpretation is probably the better reading of the interaction of IFRS 9 and IAS 28. However, I still believe it's not the only reading of the interaction between those standards. The paper sort of picks out that the scope exemption in paragraph 2.1a, read in conjunction with paragraph 14 of IAS 28, tells you that the long-term interests are in the scope of IFRS 9. I could just as easily take paragraph 2.1a and read it with paragraph 38 of IAS 28, which talks about, in substance, the long-term interest being part of the investment in the associate. I also could read it with paragraph 41, which is specific that the impairment requirements of IFRS 9 apply to other interests that are not long-term interests in the associate. And read by omission that paragraph 41 is telling me the IFRS 9 impairment does not apply to long-term interests in associates, because it specifically references that they do apply to those other interests that are not part of the long-term interests. So I think that the paper selectively picks one paragraph in IAS 28 in conjunction with paragraph 2.1a of IFRS 9 to conclude that long-term interests are in the scope of IFRS 9. And I could just as easily read other paragraphs. Now, is it the best reading of the interactions? I think it is, but I certainly don't think it's an agenda decision to actually make that conclusion that it's the only reading.
Sue?
I'm guessing that the next thing we're going to start talking about is the form of whatever comes out of the committee. And before we have that discussion, I just wanted to flag for us all to think about how we're going to manage the process, because I think what the market's asking us for is clarity on what they need to do. And I think what the staff paper helpfully has done is given a clear analysis that is, giving a pretty clear direction. This is what we think the best reading of the words is and what is required today. I guess my concern, given my experience at the board table as much as at the committee, is the staff had a terrible time trying to constrain us to talking about what do the words say as opposed to what do you wish the words said. And I just think we need to be careful with whatever we say. If we're going to send out something that people are going to start sending us comment letters on, how are we going to manage the process to make sure that the feedback that we get we can constrain to that same what do the words say analysis and not open it up to a broader question that might prevent us being able to give the market the clarity that they're looking for before we look at equity method more broadly. So I guess that's just sort of a plea for people to keep that in mind, because I think it would be really unfortunate if we all sit around the table and most people seem to be saying, I agree this is what the words say today, but let's think about the best form. But if through the form we upset our ability to give that clear message, I think it would be unfortunate.
I mean, if it's helpful at this point, I suppose at least, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn of any of my colleagues here, to say that at least I think Henry wouldn't be opposed to thinking about including an example within an agenda decision, if that is something that we think would be helpful. At least it's not something we've necessarily done before, but I don't think we maybe need to feel restricted that we can't do that.
Well, we can do whatever we want, but I think the more important, and that was the first point I had in my notes here, can we save more of the analysis into an agenda decision? I think that, to me, the more important question is whether or not this is something that we should address with an agenda decision. I'm sometimes troubled that we look at an issue and we say, yes, there's a diversity in practice, and John's outlined at least how some people might come to that conclusion, have come to that conclusion, I think. Yes, there's diversity in practice, and oh, by the way, we have to think awful hard about how to do this, and then we say the standards can be applied without any more guidance, and I'm sometimes troubled by that, and I think this one certainly presses that line. We've kind of already answered question two in the paper, and so we're on to, I think, the issue of whether or not this is an agenda decision, and if so, what do we do with the one we have? I take Sue's point that, and I'm going on a bit and I apologize for that, I take Sue's point that the marketplace is clearly asking for help. If we send out an agenda decision and it burns because people say this isn't enough or people say it isn't appropriate, we've lost two meetings. We'll come back two meetings from now and say, oops, that didn't work. With that, can I have a quick show of hands, those who support the staff conclusions as to the reading of the standards? Those who agree with the staff. Carl, I thought you said you did.
It's really question one, isn't it?
Yeah, it was question one. Yeah. So, Mikhail, you disagree. Okay. All right, that passes. Now, can I have a quick show of hands? How many would prefer that we move directly toward drafting an interpretation on this rather than an agenda decision? Bonnie?
Sorry, are those our only two options, or is there something else? Because the reason I'm asking is I heard what Sue said, and I think that's a risk. If we move to an interpretation, we'll get the, we don't like what it says, which I think is a risk. And so I guess that's why I'm asking if there's something else between, or if there's another option.
There is a plan C. And your question is appropriate. I think Plan C is one that the committee has done on rare occasions, and that is to report to the board. I think we did this on NCI puts. That is to report to the board that this is what we think the standards say, and we don't think that's the best answer. And so we want to know what, we want the board to pursue a better answer. My concern is that pursuing a better answer throws it into the long-term equity method project. And we're going to be a long time coming. Petrina?
I don't want to complicate things more, so you can ignore what I say, but I didn't know whether there was another possible option, which is to expand the agenda decision in some way to capture, for example, the example or some of the other points.
Well, if we decide it's still an agenda decision, I think that's a valid.
Okay, so I think your point is, is it?
Okay, we're going to discuss the discussion here. Bob?
I appreciate the point that we're going to get a lot of commenters who are going to then disagree with the decision and want something different. But I wasn't sure as to if we do it as an agenda decision, expose that, or an interpretation, expose it, aren't we going to get them both ways? And so aren't we better off then going with what we think would be providing more clarity, like an interpretation?
Bruce?
My comments are pretty much the same as Bob's. I mean, my concern is we can't shy away from something because we're concerned they're going to ask questions. I mean, that doesn't worry me too much. What does concern me is, you know, I come from a jurisdiction where agenda decisions are not mandatory. So we're in a very, very difficult position because these are not mandatory, but yet they're seen as best practice. And, you know, we're still trying to work out exactly what they mean now, Market. My concern is when I've spoken to people, that there is clearly diversity on this. People are definitely reading this two different ways. And I guess what concerns me is if we do an expanded agenda decision, it comes back to a discussion we had almost a year ago where we're kind of saying, well, so what does that mean? You know, the status of agenda decisions, what we're actually saying is, guys, we think this is clear. We don't need to do anything. But by the way, here's an expanded agenda decision telling you that we think it's clear. Doesn't feel right to me.
Bonnie?
I think I'm going to agree with both Bruce and Bob and that it probably is an interpretation. It's more than an agenda decision. The reason I was asking if we had another choice is if those are our two choices, then we need to pick one or the other. It seems like the interpretation would be more reasonable. I agree. I think there's diversity in practice. Even if we get people who disagree with the conclusion, then there's nothing. I mean, that's a different issue, right? That's perhaps as part of the Equity Methods Project.
Tony?
A very similar observation, I guess. Probably I have two observations around what we do next. The first is, I think it was just a vote 10 out of 12, this is what the standards say. So I think it would be important if we move on to an interpretation, we don't reopen the question that we've just decided.
Yeah.
And given what we are set up to do, I don't think we should adopt the successful approach previously adopted with written puts and push it back to the board. I think we've been asked, what does the standard say? A significant majority of us think this is what the standards say, and so we should proceed to clarify that. My preferred approach to the equity method would be to set light to IS 28, but it is what it is. There's something to come along in the future, so I think we should just make sure that we are focused on, if we move to an interpretation, that we don't reopen the question, that we draft an interpretation that says what we've just agreed. And we request comments on that interpretation, not whether the equity method is a good thing generally.
Yeah.
And I think we'd be perfectly fine disregarding comments about whether or not the equity method is a good thing generally.
Pardon me, Sue.
Isn't that exactly what we did on NCI puts?
Yeah.
Put out an interpretation saying it was clear.
Not
asking whether we like it.
Yep.
What happened?
I'm fully aware, which is why my preferred option is still where I was to begin with, that I would go with the agenda decision because I think you can follow the sequence through, and what the staff have done clarifies the way the sequence works. So, I haven't changed. My preferred view would still be to go with this as an agenda decision, maybe with some more words.
But we just have to have our eyes wide open of what the risks are, given history.
Yeah.
But if we move on to the next step, I think Sue's absolutely right, that our experience is that we get a lot of comment letters, and we then sort of hesitate as to what the next step is.
Well, and that's appropriate. When we get comment letters, we ought to give them full consideration, but we need, I think, to focus on, are they commenting on what they wish the standard says as opposed to
exactly,
what it
yeah.
says. Martin?
There are similar views like Tony. I hope that for most of the topics we are dealing here, we have diversity in practice. Otherwise, I mean, why we are sitting here? So the argument there is diversity in practice could not be the one for issuing an interpretation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So according to my view, if the standard is not clear or crystal clear, then we need to issue an interpretation. As we have seen, most of the committee members here agree that the technical analysis based on the standard is the right one. So the pure question is it more or less the only one, or could, or is it reasonable that you also could come to other conclusions? If that is not the case, then we do not need an interpretation. So we go for a gender decision. The only thing with the gender decisions, if we had diversity in practice for sure, is that for applicants, then there might be the danger, so to say, that they have done an error in the past. Yeah, and that's not a nice thing for preparers, and it's difficult to explain. So this smooth, say, phasing in of this, say, educational material, if we say a non-interpretation in this way, with that example is a kind of educational material for auditors as well as preparers, would be a good thing. I fear a little bit about this error issue for those who have been on the wrong side, so to say, from a practical perspective. But my personal view is we have no benefit if we shift it to the board, as more or less the equity project has to be finalized first, and also we have no reason to go for an interpretation if the standard is clear.
I have said on many occasions and in many public forums that it is not this committee's job to ever characterize something as a correction of an error. The outcome of that would most likely be yours truly appearing on a witness stand somewhere, and I have no intention of getting into that business. I don't get paid enough. Chung Wu?
Yeah, just one question, Bruce. What is the auditor's opinion on if there are some companies do not respect our agenda decision?
Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, so to put it simply within our context, most of the firms will say the agenda decisions need to be applied. So that's kind of the starting point as to where they are. But if a client turns around and genuinely builds an argument, and I mean, I don't necessarily agree with what Martin said. I think diversity is one of the cornerstones of what we're trying to resolve here. If they can turn around, and I mean, we've had it where somebody will pick up an agenda paper and say, hey, look, guys, there's diversity. People are reading this a different way. You know, the committee's come out and said, we think this is the better way, but we haven't done it. If they're prepared to build that argument and find a difference to it, if they can justify it, then they don't have to follow it.
In the case, there might be some other factors or circumstances that might not be covered in the agenda decision.
Yes.
So it's a little different. So if we make some kind of agenda decision by the committee here, then I guess, you know, most of the audit big accounting firms we respect, and some of the regulators might respect such kind of decisions. So it's not easy to justify the final decision if they do not respect the agenda decision. That's what I'm saying. So maybe it might affect our decision whether we need to issue interpretation or not on this issue. So because you know, another thing is maybe some the market players would like to have better answer rather than their just a literal answer like here. So actually, I agree with the toss this idea to the board to resolve this situation better, provide a better solution. Yeah, that's the different path in any way.
Just my one comment, so it's off track, just in terms of that, very simply, is my experience from the average preparer is tell us what to do and we'll do it. And the problem we've got is agenda decisions don't tell you what to do. And that's kind of the problem we've seen.
We have had circumstances in which a jurisdiction says it will not enforce a particular agenda decision. And my understanding is that's a clean audit opinion, because standards do not compel a company to change its accounting practices based on an agenda decision. Miguel?
I think it's better to come to a solution that is better and that addresses to the board, because I mean, to spend a lot of time to make something that gives a bad result. And is it really so that it's worse problem to have some diversity in practice than to identify something that is not good? So in my mind, the outcome of the technical analysis then is not a good answer. And to drive that and the whole way to conclude that, because that is just what the standard says, when people are obviously very in different opinions on what, both what maybe how to interpret the standard, but also then what the outcome should be. So in my mind, it should be better to go for the 51 paragraph that is proposed here, that address that back to the board and to ask for clarity of what standard should be applied.
Okay. The point's taken. And I'm going to give you plan A, plan B, and plan C and ask for first preferences. But first, to the two board members who are here, my sense is that there is very little possibility of the board taking up a limited amendment to the equity method, which is what essentially Mikel is arguing for. I think my sense is the board's reaction would be, no, there's too much going on in the equity method. We think it has to be part of the long-term project. I see the two board members shaking their heads yes in agreement with that. So my sense is that plan C throws this into the long-term project. Sue?
I agree with that because of the recent experience on doing patches to 28 hasn't been the happiest. Also, I think that the board is very clearly of the view from our meeting that this interaction is clear, so they would like a clear message to the market that it's clear.
Okay. All right. I'm going to ask for a vote of first preference, and then we'll see how that works. So we have plan A, which is an agenda decision, perhaps an expanded format. Plan B, which is to proceed to an interpretation. And plan C, which is to tell the board we don't think this is the best answer and propose that the board take up a limited amendment. First preference, plan A, the agenda decision. I'm counting five, four.
Four.
First preference and interpretation.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven.
Seven. And first preference, the board. Mikel. Okay. Who would object to moving? So first preferences, we didn't have a clear majority, but we had a plurality. Who would object to moving to an interpretation? You ought to be consistent, yeah. Man. Yeah. Okay, one.
Subject to not having this conversation again when we get off.
Right. Okay, that's what we're going to do. So get the pencil out and start writing. I also, before Takashi gets away, want to compliment the staff on the paper and on the discipline. Bonnie?
On this one before we move off, even though we will be moving towards an interpretation, is there some way to make sure that this topic is part of the equity project? Because even though this is what the standards say, I agree, it's not the best answer. So is there we have to interpret what currently exists, right? So can we make sure that the topic also gets considered?
Certainly, we can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. We can do that internally.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. I totally agree with Bonnie's suggestion. I would also like to highlight that there is also a link with IS 21, paragraph 15, and it might be worth clarifying as part of the work done on the financial instruments with the characteristics of equity, the link to make sure that it is clear what is quasi-equity, because I think that would be helpful.
Okay. Point taken.